Hi, and welcome to Line Noise, the latest news from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, prepackaged for the proprietary ear and auditory nerve platform. I'm Danny O'Brien, and for this edition, we have an extended interview with EFF attorney Fred von Lohmann, covering in detail what's up with the Section 115 Reform Act, or CIRA, which has had a lot of coverage this week on the slash dots and the digs, and gathered protests from thousands of net users, as well as the EFF, Public Knowledge, IP Action, the Association of Computing Machinery, as well as Radio Shack and Bell South. We talked about exactly what the dangers were with this apparently innocuous copyright bill, but first I asked Fred the most pressing question. What's the proper abbreviation for the Section 115 Reform Act?
Well, I'm torn because I think everybody in DC is calling it CIRA, S-I-R-A. And of course, that's can't possibly be right because there's no I in Section 115 Reform Act. So it should be S-1-R-A, but that's way too leet for Washington.
What was the original intent of this bill?
The original intent of the bill was to clean up the music licensing thicket that authorized music services face today and have faced for ever since their beginning. As crazy as it might sound, companies like Yahoo and Napster and Rhapsody and all of these companies that have been offering authorized, legal, for-pay music services have never really known whether what they were doing was legal. There are so many different licenses you need that they have always had a risk of being sued by somebody in the music business.
Have they actually been sued in the past?
In fact, some have. Yahoo, for example, has been in litigation over its LaunchCast service, which it acquired from Launch in 2001. So that lawsuit's been dragging on now for 5 years. But always the last holdouts in this game are the music publishers. Those are the people that are in control of the songwriter's rights.
Right.
So the underlying song, not the recording, but the underlying song. And they're their own industry. They're kind of separate from the record labels in many cases. And they've really been the stumbling block here. So to a large extent, the Section 115 reform effort is a tug of war between the authorized music services like Apple and Rhapsody and Napster and Yahoo on one hand, and the music publishing industry on the other hand. And the music services have said, listen, we want to pay you. We're not opposed to paying you. We just want to be able to pay a blanket fee and then let you guys divide it up amongst yourselves. Because if we have to clear every song individually one at a time, we basically can't be in this business. The music publishers have slowly, belatedly, come around and have finally at least warmed up to the basic concept of offering some sort of a blanket license.
That all sounds good.
And that part of it is good. The problem is, at the 11th hour, more or less, the music publishers decided they were going to try to smuggle in some other language into this bill in an effort to stack the deck for other fights in the future. I'm all in favor of solving the licensing quagmire. That's a great thing. I'm all for that. But I don't see why we should sell out our fair use rights in order to somehow work out a deal between these two industries.
What's the sleight of hand that's going on here?
Well, there are a couple of pieces of sleight of hand in the legislation. Two pieces of sleight of hand and one that is actually pretty darn obvious. First of all, the music services are offered a license, not just for the copies that they are selling to you, but for all the, quote, incidental copies, unquote, made along the way, including, in the language of the statute, cache copies, network copies, and RAM buffer copies. And so that creates the implication that all of those copies, cache copies, network copies, RAM buffer copies, all the other incidental copies that computers automatically make in the course of doing their business, have to be licensed, right? And if that's the case, then the music services are fine because they got a license.
Right.
But it creates an implication in the statute that everybody else needs a license.
But the music industry isn't going to start suing people for like the RAM in their machines and the copies that they have there. And what's the actual implication of having that for future lawsuits?
Well, I think the music industry might actually start suing you for RAM copies, cache copies, buffer copies.
Right.
And in fact, it has already happened, at least in one case, in a lawsuit brought by Perfect 10 against Google a few months ago. Perfect 10 argued that the browser cache on your computer is an infringing copy of images that you view in your browser on the internet. And then they were trying to hold Google responsible for the infringing copies made on every Google user's browser cache.
So this becomes a tool to litigate against particular targets.
Then. Exactly. Right? Basically, it becomes a tool that can be used to litigate against everybody other than the music services who just got a license for this particular activity.
Okay, so that's the caching thing, which I think a lot of people have picked up on. Yeah. What's the other two?
One is another sleight of hand where the bill talks about downloads and streams as distributions. And that's sort of a term of art in the Copyright Act. Copyright owners enjoy a few exclusive rights. Reproduction is one, distribution is a different one, public performance is another one, and the copyright law very carefully defines each of these things. So a regular person says, well, it's a distribution, of course, because I buy a download from iTunes, it comes on my computer, and then I have a copy. The way we talk about distribution in our right. everyday lives, but the Copyright Act doesn't use the dictionary definition. The Copyright Act uses a very specific definition, and we've been arguing in court in several cases that distribution only involves distribution of physical copies, the actual changing hands of physical copies. So if I buy a book and then I give the book to you, that's a distribution. If I make a copy of the book on my computer and then you come and download it from me, that's not a distribution because there's no physical copy that changes hands. What we have there in copyright terms is multiple reproductions. I made a copy, you made a copy. No distribution happened. It's just lots of copies.
So what's the advantage here for the music industry to make transmission over the internet distribution?
Well, the big change that that makes is it gives them the ability to go after people who are licensed to transmit already, but not licensed to distribute. And the rubber hit the road on this in the XM lawsuit that was brought just a few weeks ago. So in that case, the recording industry sued XM Radio, the satellite radio service, for distributing to its users these little so-called INO recording devices. They're receiver recorders. They allow people to record up to, I think, 50 hours of XM radio.
Right.
And the theory in the case is that because XM is broadcasting music to people who have recorders, they are effectively distributing music. And now, the reason that matters is because XM already has a license to transmit.
Right.
The statute specifically gives them a license to transmit. They pay for that license to transmit. Unless you buy this distribution theory, XM is totally legal, right? They've paid, they're legit. Now, if the record companies can claim that, aha, the transmissions to recorders, that's distribution, as well as traditional public performance, which is what transmission normally has been viewed as, then that gives them a second opportunity to basically shake down broadcasters like XM. And it doesn't just end at XM, right? If broadcasting to people who have recorders is a distribution, then DirecTV and Comcast are in a world of trouble too. They can basically go and shake down every broadcaster out there.
Right.
So that's why trying to sneak the word distribution into this statute can make such a big difference, because it creates a precedent so that when they go into court against XM, and then maybe someday against DirecTV and Comcast and everybody who provides PVRs to their subscribers, they can say, look here in Section 115, Congress passed this law. The last time Congress thought about this, they said that transmissions over the internet are distributions. The third piece of this bill that's troubling is basically an effort to ban products like the INO. There is language in here that basically does something very similar to what the Perform Act, which is another bill that's pending in front of Congress, tried to do, which is say, if you are going to have one of these licenses, you are forbidden from offering your subscribers recording devices or encouraging them or assisting them in any way to make recordings.
Does that sort of enforce DRM on these systems, or is it?
It's not really so much about enforcing DRM in this case. In this case, it's just a flat prohibition on doing anything
right.
that would allow home taping.
Right.
And so it's really a facial attack on home taping in the digital context.
Right. So in particular, kind of proprietary setups like XM, they can't sell something that would allow you to record the content that they're broadcasting.
Exactly. Right. And even beyond that, they're not allowed to point you to other products that can record their broadcasts, or to, you know, do anything that would encourage you or help you to do that. And, you know, again, my view is home taping has been something, you know, we've been accustomed to for decades. In fact, it's legal under existing copyright law under the Audio Home Recording Act. And so it seems to me a bad idea to create a whole new prohibition on home recording in an effort to just solve this this, you know, music downloading issue.
So a few days ago, this was on nobody's scopes. No one had noticed this language, and the bill was going to be introduced and marked up on the same day, right? So what has there been any change? I mean, people have been writing and phoning in.
Yeah, well, the good news is that all of the attention has made a difference. As you point out, the bill was developed basically largely in secret between the authorized music people on the one hand, that's the people represented by the Digital Media Association, otherwise known as DEMA, and the National Music Publishers Association on the other. And so it was basically a deal, kind of a closed-door deal struck between these two industry lobby organizations. And the reason people hadn't heard about it is because, frankly, there'd been no draft introduced.
Right.
You know, it was leaked by the lobbyists, and we were told this is going to be introduced and marked up and passed by the subcommittee all on the same day, and in fact, it's going to be 4 days from now. And so the reason you didn't hear about it was they were trying to apparently pass this thing in the dead of night before anybody actually had a chance to read it, which unfortunately is all too common when these kinds of deals are struck, and then Congress basically just takes out the rubber stamp for them. Fortunately, all of the outpouring of concern has made a difference. First of all, it caused the subcommittee to postpone the markup by a day. I've seen some interim drafts suggesting they are trying to fix some of these issues there, and I expect that when the bill finally surfaces there, there will be some new language that tries to fix some of these problems. I'm hopeful that we're going to get a better bill. We're going to basically stop the music publishers from smuggling these dangerous provisions in, you know, under cover of darkness, as it were.
And we'll hear how they pronounce it, too.
Yeah, I bet everyone will say Section 115 Reform Act really fast.
That was Fred von Lohmann, Senior Staff Attorney at EFF. If you'd like details on how to help reform this reform bill, go to action.eff.org/Sira. That's with an I. Next time on Line Noise, we'll have some news of audio and broadcast flags being debated in the Senate. And won't that be fun? Until then, stay out of trouble, and when you do find yourself in it anyway, mail information@eff.org. We'll be happy to help.